Okay, we held off on roll call, Bill, just so we could include you. So we'll start with the call to order. Bill Brannigan?
He's talking.
Well, that's close enough. We'll call him here.
Yeah.
Jim Hanselman?
He's equally here.
Gary East?
Here.
Braulio Escobar?
Here.
John Updike?
Here.
Marjorie Blom?
There.
Dustin Capri?
Yeah. Here.
Capri or Capri?
Capri.
Capri.
And Greg Sutton? Absent. New business. Draft amendments to facilitate needed housing. Item 2A, staff report or memorandum.
Yeah, I'm going to go ahead and just bring this up, kind of work through the draft amendments. And then I was able to kind of sync up and work through the RV piece, and that's what I sent to you. So instead of looking at separate documents, I kind of combined, okay, here's where the administrative rules governing RV parks relate, how they relate to what's in our code, and I can walk through that as well. So just give me a second here. By the way, that RV park code is over 40 years old. It's pretty old. But the irony is it's not all that different than the administrative rule, which I suspect is just about as old. They haven't really put a lot of attention to that kind of stuff.
Is there any active proposals for RV park development?
No, the last one we had was actually the Eastside Trailer Park where Webster's purchased it, and they as a non-conforming park, an old park that didn't meet any of the rules, and they renovated it to meet current RV park standards and then sold it. So that's a compliant park. So they went through and met all of the standards that we'll be talking about.
Which one?
Eastside Trailer Park, the one next to the high school, just south of the high school. You can't see it because there's a big wood fence around it because that was one of the requirements.
Quite. Hmm.
Yeah. One near the
15 units in there.
Yeah.
So, Derek, is there anything that an existing park might propose that would trigger the application of these new code requirements, or no? It would have to be a new park application where these changes would appear.
It would need to be a new park, or they would need to choose to go down that path as opposed to seeking to alter a non-conforming park. So in the past, and I'm going to use Eastside because it did go through this, Eastside added three mobile homes to the park. And at the time, Eastside had a couple mobile homes in the park proper. It was kind of a mix. And then some old trailers and RVs and whatnot. They went through a non-conforming use alteration at the time because they could establish this is a non-conforming park, predated these standards, and they did an alteration. If somebody has a park and they look at it and say, okay, I've got an old non-conforming park at maybe 8-10 units, but I want to totally retrofit this and do 25 units, they're probably coming under these standards. That's probably not a candidate for an alteration. But if they were just, say, adding 3 to, it's going from 7 to 10 on a non-conforming, that would seem doable. Take it through the non-conforming process.
Derek, whatever happened to the gentleman that was going to put in, I guess, like some park model trailers down where the old hotel used to be down there on South, was it 11th Street? Tore that whole old hotel down there by, right across from the Chevron station. Remember that? This was a little while ago. But
I mean, I'm not down by the bridge.
Yeah, well, it's down. Yeah, it's down.
The old, what was it? The old Park Motel? It's a kind of a long linear piece.
Yeah.
Is that the one
yeah,
you're talking about? Over by the used to be the 1010 building?
Yep.
Nothing happened to that. Yeah. I thought Doug Fitz was behind that at the time and sold it, and so nothing happened. I know Doug ended up putting some park models over on, what is it, Surfside? The one on 3rd Street. They ended up putting a few in there, so they called, two or three. Yeah, I don't know what the future is for that old motel site. It's been vacant for a while, still has a construction fencing up down there, as ever, last time I was down there. Okay, so I'm going to go ahead and get this loaded. So share, Zoom share screen, here we go. Okay, so what I'm this is in your package. You all had a chance to, I trust you had a chance to kind of look through this. And so what we have here is a package of potential amendments that had been identified as issues in the code that, if adjusted, could help facilitate construction of housing in a variety of different ways. They were listed in the housing production strategy at pages 34 and 35. We had previously talked about that, and what I got from our prior conversation was, yes, she wanted to see some changes that were responsive to the issues that were listed in the housing production strategy as potential barriers. That's what I put in here. So I've got this document to go through, and then the RV one would be separate, since I didn't have that fully fleshed out when the packets were posted. You ended up getting multiple pieces there. I've since consolidated that. So ministerial action, it's already in the code as a defined term, but it relates to a change that I think we ought to be making in 1452, so I put it in here just so you remember what that term means. The first change gets a transitional housing. We don't have that in the code right now explicitly. Transitional housing would be, you know, yurts potentially. Could be Conestoga huts. A transitional housing arrangement operated by a public entity or a nonprofit entity.
Like the tap house run by the parole office.
Tap house? I'm sorry?
Well, I think there's two condominiums across from the water treatment plant on Northwest 3rd, and there's another one right behind the swimming pool.
No, I'm talking more about what you've seen out there. Like Eugene has this, you know, Portland has some of these where you just have, you know.
Little tiny boxes.
Little huts, boxes, you know, small structures that people can sleep in. And you would typically then also have a common building where you have a kitchen, restroom facility, showers. The common building would be built to code.
The transitional housing, I was thinking of were transition from prison back to the community.
Okay, that halfway house. Yeah, this is transitional in the sense that it's short duration, less than 30 days, mm-hmm. temporary type housing for somebody who's houseless. Kind of the stage one versus then getting them into, you know, working them to get into a little bit longer term housing.
So, you know what's happening with the old Penny Saver Motel across from what used to be the lumberyard?
Yeah, Northwest Coastal Housing is doing a project turnkey there. They were able to get state money. Mm-hmm. And so that's the one right next to the feed store.
Right next door to the feed store.
Yeah, that's the one. Yeah. So they're in the process of renovating it. They've got to make a number of changes to it to make it suitable for that purpose.
And then who will be in it?
Presumably folks that are homeless that need housing. Exactly how that's going to work, I don't have all the details from Sheila, but it's Northwest Coastal Housing who's behind it. Sheila Stiley.
You know how many units they're kind of dancing about?
Whatever was in the hotel, motel. They're the not same, adding same. Any. Yeah, there's also some buildings to the back which are a little bit more complicated. Those were built as utility buildings, but later renovated without permits into apartments. And so, okay. Unfortunately, Sheila ended up getting that as part of the package where she purchased the property, and they didn't understand that there was that issue.
Doors, that's true. Illegal doors.
So they're working on getting that sorted out. But this would add it in as a community service use in the commercial and industrial areas, much like emergency shelters, which is part of the package that you've recommended to the council. I didn't list that as a change. I didn't want to confuse things. If obviously the council doesn't approve everything that you recommended recently, then it won't be in there. But I'm just trying to make sure that I'm working with the most current copy of the code. Yeah. Don't inadvertently delete something.
Include in the draft a requirement that the siting of a shelter in a residential neighborhood would go before the city council to ensure that it met the criteria.
Yes. Yeah, that's for the emergency shelter piece. Exactly. Yeah, no, that's in there. This one wouldn't be in the red. This would not be transitional housing of this nature would not be permitted in a residential area. It'd be limited to commercial industrial areas. I don't know if we're going to have any traction on it. We've had people tire kick in the past about it. We'll see. Same deal down here. Just got added as a footnote. Added transitional housing as defined. Yeah.
It's minor, but
yeah.
Should it really say 1 month and not 30 days?
In following up on that comment.
Yeah, I think it was just matching language up here.
30 days or a month.
Yeah, because I was using the same language that it's used up here. Because it falls under this provision that was already in. We already had a provision that allowed shelter or housing for periods of less than 1 month when operated by a public or nonprofit agency, including trans. So I was just specifically calling it out. So I was just trying to match.
It's just a little more precise, but you're right. It needs to be consistent. That's probably more important.
Yeah, well, I mean, some months have 28 days or 31 days. So month is definitely a better to use than 30 days.
The principle here, though, Braulio, to your question, was is this type of housing is actually intended to be short-term, and the point being that you're trying to move folks from this kind of rough housing situation to something a little stronger.
The mode was from the street to transitional housing to permanent housing.
So I could, for example, if one of these happened, if we did a transitional housing here, somebody was starting to operate that, I could see those folks that are clients staying there begin to shift over to a place like what Northwest Coastal Housing and Sheila's doing, which you know would be into a little bit nicer living arrangement, you know, with cooking facility in a unit and tenancy being a little bit longer than 30 days. Still short term, but not a 30-day short term. Maybe 90, 120.
Weather has turned wintery.
Yeah.
I think about, you know, you have the county's shelter.
Yep.
You know, at 7 o'clock, folks have to, 7 o'clock in the morning, folks have to get up and leave.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a difficult concept for me to wrap my arms around, given the weather.
Yeah.
You know? Even without the weather, getting up and being ready to go at 7 in the morning is really an effort.
Yeah, and you know, I've stopped in and seen, you know, what they're doing, and you know, it's a positive step for our community.
Mm-hmm.
Derek, on 14/11/30.
Pardon?
I was just on 14.
Doing it in a 14/11 now. The next up.
Yeah, that sort of The new language like perplexed me. So how does that, I'm trying to think of an area. So like in a vacated right of way, would that qualify as an underdeveloped right of way?
No, an we have a lot of underdeveloped rights of way.
What is
an underdeveloped right of way is one that's not fully developed to its boundaries. So we have a 50-foot wide right of way, okay? Which is common for a local street. Now, when you see a fully developed local street, which would be your two travel lanes, your two parking bays, and sidewalks, you're pretty much using that full 50 feet. We don't have that everywhere around the city, though. We have a lot of areas where we don't have the on-street parking bays, and we just have the traveled roadway, and say we have gravel shoulders. I can think of a lot of areas on the west side of 101 that would fit into that kind of category. And so your driveways end up extending well inside the right-of-way to the street, obviously, because that's where. And so what this is saying is that for purposes of measuring a 20-foot driveway, we're measuring it to the edge of the pavement, not the edge of the right-of-way. So if the edge of the street pavement is 10 feet in from the right-of-way, then 10 feet of their driveway can be in the right-of-way.
But the building has to be 20-foot setback from the property line.
No, you're talking about from the garage.
For garages.
That's why I'm saying, no, with this clarification, what you can have, and we have it all over the place, is a 20-foot driveway that, say, is 5 feet in a right-of-way and 15 feet outside.
But the garage can't be any closer than 20 feet from the property line.
No, this is the garage setback, is what it's talking about. The principle for the garage setback was to ensure you had 20 feet of driveway area.
So, like, for, I mean, every project we've done, we've always had to set it back, the garage 20 feet from the property line. So in that case, typically the property line, like you said, is well within. So you're like actually 25, 30 feet back from the edge of the road by the time you get a garage. With this language, the garage itself can now be 20 feet from the edge of the pavement.
That's what this is talking about, yes.
Like that one we did on Spring Street.
Yeah, Spring Street's a good example. We have a whole lot of homes with driveways that are 20 feet, but a good portion of that's inside the right-of-way.
But in the past, you've always had to ask for permission. So this would mean, like, outright from now on.
Remember, we're trying to make it easier.
I just wish I wouldn't have done my house yet. God, I would have put it a heck of a lot closer.
There is a potential downside to it. It does mean that there, you know, if later we come in and retrofit a street and fully develop it out, you could have a situation where you have substandard driveways or vehicles parking across a sidewalk.
Public Works didn't have any issue
with that. How often do we fully retrofit a street? We'll do that occasionally in urban renewal areas, but otherwise it's probably not all that common. And in the urban renewal areas where we do it, we're still going to be running into these circumstances because it's not like you don't have the driveways already, you know.
Well, what are the implications for somebody that takes advantage of this and then the street is later fully developed? Does that become, what, the house is unsaleable because it doesn't meet code what?
We have some of these. We have. I can think of a number of circumstances in Knight Beach, for example, where we have circumstances where you have shorter driveways. So you just have a shorter driveway. You either don't park in it, you park in your garage, or if you can park in it without obstructing vehicle traffic, you do so.
It only buys you 5 feet anyway, though, right? Because the building setback will still be 15, right? It was 20 and 15 previously.
Unless there's some sort of, we're talking about adjustments to those two here in a minute. But yes.
So then you get that additional.
Typically on a front yard, it's the lowest that's going to be, and that would be in a corner lot situation, would be 10 feet. Because remember, in a corner where you have two fronts, it's you know, 10, 20, 15, 15, or you know, some combination that makes 30.
Yeah.
There.
I mean, I think the majority of streets in Newport are, I mean, you have a significant amount of distance between your property line and the edge of the road, typically. That's something we run into clients all the time because they think they own all the way to the street and they're like, oh, this is my property. I'm like, no. Your property's way back here.
You know, and some of those rights of way can never practically be built fully to their width. Ocean View is a good example. The terrain there is just not conducive to widening that out. There's no way that you'd be able to pencil that out given the retaining walls that have to be built and all that. Other areas, I can think of Northwest 55th up in Agate Beach. That's going to be an urban renewal project. that gravel road up there is going to get paved and developed at some point. But, you know, you already have a built, it's not like it's all vacant land either side of the road. So you'll be dealing with the existing built condition.
So there really is no implication other than it might have changed their local parking. I mean, there's no implication for the property.
Right. There's no, yeah, it's not going to impact the property their ability to sell their home at all.
You're still going to have buildings a lot closer to roads, though.
You'd have buildings closer to sidewalk.
Yeah,
probably
yeah.
Not road.
Oh, yes. Yeah,
sidewalk. Sidewalk. That would be what it would be.
Why do we need so maybe that's just what confused me, because I read like underdeveloped rights of way, and I was thinking about like vacated streets right of way sort of thing.
Mm-mm.
Can't we just say within right of ways? I mean, you don't really need to say underdeveloped. It's basically every single right-of-way in the city of Newport, right?
I can do that. I think the principle was underdeveloped. It's but you're right. I mean, if the right-of-way is fully developed.
This would still, I mean, it reads to me like it would still apply correctly if it's fully developed. Curb,
so just measure
curb, all that.
Yeah, you'd still measure 20
so
feet
back. Yeah, I don't know that undeveloped adds anything.
I just can't see a scenario where a person complies with a 20-foot setback, then the road is developed, and the city would then want them to move the garage or...
Oh, no. That would not happen.
I can't see that, frankly, happening. I think they have to find some type of hardship method to allow the structure to remain. Oh.
Well, just because of proximity, why would it have to be moved, mm-hmm. Right? It's not in the right of way.
You're also going to pick it up in the
driveway when you're shorter.
You have to have the sidewalk,
shorter.
Right? Derek?
Mm-hmm.
So when Public Works reviews the application, the sidewalk is going to be a part of it. So even if they have, if there is a situation where they could get tighter, they still have to comply with the sidewalks and all the driveway approach and all of that still would apply.
Right.
And
I mean,
so then, like,
this isn't going to impact the city's ability to get sidewalk in.
Yeah.
The city, and if the city is either requiring it because of redevelopment or doing it as some sort of sidewalk project, it's still in the right of way. We'd still have the ability to do it.
Yeah. I think the only issue that'll come up probably is power, don't you think? Like, there's some instances mm-hmm. where power lines are like right along property lines.
This doesn't impact, I mean, they're going to have to deal with anybody who's Central doing
Lincoln,
development's
yeah.
going to have to deal with utilities that are in the right of way.
Bill, did you have a question? Guess not. I thought I heard him. Okay.
No. I'm trying to pull with my mouse, which isn't working.
Okay. Going on to density limitations. Okay, here's an option on the height. 35 feet or 40 feet, subject to this little stipulation here. The 40-foot height allowance is limited to multifamily uses with pitched roof construction where the predominant roof pitch is 512 or steeper. This is one way to get at the issue that the Windhaven folks brought up, and it's a legitimate issue. It's hard for multifamily construction to get three full floors with a 35-foot building height if they're doing any kind of pitched roof construction. And I took a look at Windhaven's just to try to make sure I had a good handle on it. They had to get an adjustment on phase two, which is what they're currently doing. It was a staff level land use decision, and it was a 512 roof pitch, and they came in at 38.5 feet on flat graded ground. And they're not doing anything egregious on their building heights for their three floors. It's just a function of you got three floors of apartments and then throw on a pitched roof and, you know, yeah, it's tight.
I think it should be 312. 312 is like still a reasonable roof. It drains well. But 512, you eat up a lot, you know, quickly. If you get a 30-foot wide building, you're not really giving them that much.
If they did a 312, then they probably wouldn't have needed the adjustment. That's kind of where I'm at. I mean, if I mean, you've got 35 feet to play with. Certainly, if you're doing a flat roof, why would you need an, you know, I mean, more than 35 feet for three floors?
Yeah.
312, I think you're still probably in the same.
It's still tight. I mean, it'll be hard. The only benefit is from finish grade, so you can, and sites are steep, so, and sloping.
Well, remember, with slopes, we that gets kind of averaged out. So.
Yeah, from high side, low side, yeah.
Right. I don't know. What are your brother's thoughts on that? I can put whatever roof pitch you think makes sense in there.
5-12 is pretty steep.
Yeah, 4-12, I would say, you know, 3.5-4. Don't really want to get too much less than that, then have issues with water filtration and a few other things if you're doing a standard asphalt shingle roof.
Anybody else? Some thoughts on the roof pitch? Or concept?
Nope.
No matter what, even with a 312, you're not going to get people that can do a four-story building in 40 feet. So if the goal is to try to get three stories.
How about 412?
412, fine. Sounds reasonable. When does this get adopted? Thinking. What about, was there any thought to lot coverage? I thought we had talked about that.
You gotta be patient. We haven't got to this
one. But no, it's not on the.
Just wait. Be patient. It's there.
So the 412 or 512 doesn't hurt in if the goal is to make it easier for such development, wouldn't hurt it any. That's the gist I'm getting. Okay.
I'm just taking a note, writing a note. Okay. Working, let's find out. Ahaha. On-street parking credits.
Oh boy.
I mean, this was in the housing production strategy. It's a legitimate issue in terms of cost that it adds to housing. As I also included in your packet, the current concept that the governor is about to drop in the short session, which will force our hand in this regard, period, which says we'll just have to, if they don't want to have to provide it, we have to not require it. My thought, frankly, is get ahead of it and provide an on-street parking credit in a manner that makes sense. And that way it's in our code and likely to be taken advantage of by the developer, as opposed to we don't provide it, they don't want to provide off-street parking because there's ample amount of it in front of them or for whatever other reason, and we're forced to because of the governor's bill. That's my two cents. I think this is a very good accommodation because it only allows the on-street parking credit when we have on-street parking on both sides of the streets, which is these big, broad avenues that we have in northeast side of the town by the high school and stuff. You see where we have a fully developed wide street section and ample on-street parking. In those cases, it makes sense. We're not talking about narrow streets where we don't have parking. We hashed out a lot of this other aspect too. So this doesn't apply for short-term rentals and other things like that. That's very clearly articulated here. But the principle is if we've got the parking on street, it's reasonable.
I disagree. And I take as an example those condominiums on Northwest 3rd, which would be just east of Nana's. There were two unit condominiums built there with no parking, okay? So they rely upon the off-street parking. On the side of the street where the condominiums are constructed, there's a limitation on the amount of time that you can park your car there because of the Nye Beach issues with parking, okay? Then you combine that with the proximity to Nana's and the folks who were coming up from Nana's looking for parking. So what has then happened is those folks have migrated on over to the parking lot of City Grimstad's complex where I used to have my office. I'm just strongly in favor, if you're going to build a dwelling, there ought to be an off-street parking for the unit.
But I'm only using Nine, let's use Nine Beach as an example. I'll give you two of them. You look at all of the older housing sandwiched between Coast and Cliff. If at least half, if not more of that, they don't have any off-street parking. They've always relied on parking on the street. It's worked just fine. We had the project up by across from the Inn at Nine Beach. The, what was that, 10 units? They yep. provided one off-street parking. Remember, oh, this is the sky is going to fall. It's going to be parking congestion. Nobody can ever. Did you hear any problems with it afterwards? No. I believe we actually had somebody who came in here and testified, and there was a commission member who said, hey, how's that problem? How's that parking issue on Coast? We haven't had any problems. When you had nine neighbors in here.
In the neighborhood that I'm addressing, mm-hmm. I see problems. Mm-hmm. Okay. And, those are new constructions. It wasn't something that was, you know, grandfathered in like your first example. I don't have
but very comment. Similar to the second
I'm
example.
I'm not commenting on the new condo or the the motel up on up further up Coast Street. I'm not making a comment on that.
Yeah.
I wasn't involved in that decision making process.
Well, remember that's because the code already has a credit built in for Nye Beach. That's why both of those had it, because if you have the parking available in front of your unit, you get a one-for-one credit already in the code. And that's an area where it seems to be working. Sure, you're going to have but how some of the parking issues in Nye Beach, also with the parking permits and stuff, are that's got a process that in of itself is going to work itself out once we wrap up with the Bayfront.
But how could you say there's off-street parking when there's a limitation of 2 hours imposed by... you know, by the city, increase the turnover in that business area.
That's where parking permits come in those areas. But I mean, I can cite all kinds of streets where we have no time limits on the streets, none whatsoever. Everything on the northeast area, which is largely built with very wide streets and ample on-street parking, which if you drive down that, and I drive it all the time, you know, that on-street parking is
Eric,
barely congested.
About new construction, not stuff that's already there and been grandfathered in there historically.
But a lot of what we do see in these built areas is infill redevelopment. An old cottage gets torn down and gets replaced with multiple units. And as you can see, with a lot of the code revisions we've been making, you're going to see more and more single-family old homes torn down and replaced with fourplexes or duplexes. Or we may even at some point see as that last, now we've got single-room occupancy up to six. You know, so you're going to see a little bit more in the way of different housing types pop up in these areas.
Well, from my point of view, I've always agreed with Braulio that if you're going to build a residence, the residents ought to be able to park on the property. You remember I came on pretty strong about that 10-unit thing, and I still am not convinced that it's not a problem, but it's off my route. I never go by there anymore. But
outside out of mind.
Yeah. But I see the point of this. The overall scope of everything you've got here is to try and make it a little less expensive to do development to get some more doors in the door. And so I don't have a problem with it given that context.
Yeah, the Nye Beach project, I know from conversations with the developer on the one up across from the Inn at Nye Beach, that project would not have happened if they had to try to put a whole bunch of off-street parking in. It just wouldn't have happened.
Yeah. No doubt. Right. Is this something we need? I mean, how do we resolve this?
Well, when it comes to it, for now it sounds like it's if you have any issues with any of the specific language, I think it's a good time to hash it out. Sounds like this is an item that we just move it forward, and if it doesn't, if you don't vote to support it at the end of the day, majority of you, then we pull it out. But, and I will keep you informed on what happens with the governor's stuff. I'm not using that. I'm just telling you that died by one vote because they put in a UGB amendment provision at the end that the Thousand Friends didn't like. Otherwise, that package goes through, including the parking stuff. And we have argued with the governor not to give us at least some flexibility with off-street parking, because waiving it in all circumstances does not make sense. We got lots of narrow streets where we don't have on-street parking, and if we have to waive it in those cases, we create safety problems for the community. Our fire folks can't get down the streets because you can get overly congested roads, because people will park where they can park. You know, they're going to do it, and it's just going to create a nightmare for us. And so, but they don't care. They see off-street parking requirements, mandates from local governments as just adding unnecessary cost onto housing. And so...
So if that goes through, this all becomes moot.
No, not necessarily. I take your point. If it goes through and somebody doesn't want to do this, then we're still dealing with whatever the governor did. But if we have something that's on the books that's reasonable, a developer is likely to take advantage of it, and we don't have to deal with that. That's the reason to put it in there, is to frame it and put it into our code in a way that makes sense, and it would give us a tool down the road should somebody try to get the adjustment, and it's a very unsafe condition, to say, hey, look, it's an unsafe condition. We're going to fight you on the adjustment, and it's not because we're insensitive to the need for credits. See, we have it on the books. It just, we have it on the books in a way that makes sense, not in the way you're asking for.
Without being cynical, Derek, mm-hmm. what you're saying is the developer wants to maximize that profit. You know, they want to make sure the project pencils out.
Mm-hmm.
But if we go back to those projects across from the Inn at Nye Beach, historically there were those old beach cottages that didn't have any parking. And so what you did is replaced old dwellings with new dwellings with, you know, the same parking scheme.
But with more dwellings. I think there was three, maybe four there. Mm-hmm. In the end game, it was like 10. But, yeah. What I hear is you get it. You don't have any specific comments right now in the language, and we'll see what happens, whether or not it makes it through a formal vote.
Yeah, well, it's better to have something in here.
Yeah, I agree.
Than having the situation where the state forces us to do what they want, rather than having something in here that makes sense for us.
Are you going to present the package as one up or down, or do we get to vote on line items, so to speak?
You always get to pick off anything that you want to pull out for a specific discussion and motion. So that's your privilege when you're looking at a legislative package, be it parking or any other provision that we're talking about. If there's something, I would just suggest you flag it. We know this is going to be an issue. It has been in the past part of discussions, and you can pull it out for a specific motion.
I just wonder whether, is it necessary to specify these have to be parallel parking spaces?
You're thinking of like what the city put in on the bayfront?
Yeah.
Yeah, you could do those. No. You actually get more spaces.
Herringbone?
Yeah. Like on
the street.
I mean, if the bayfront is any example of moving traffic through,
that's a slightly different issue.
You have to deal with fishermen and contractors who drive big trucks, and they park where they need to park.
But that's not, we're dealing here with residential on residential streets. But I don't see anything in here that would prohibit me from saying, oh, I can get two angled parking spaces in front of my house, so I'll just use those.
You know, well, if it's fully built out road, maybe there's enough clearance for everything. But if it's a substandard area, I still would want the fire chief to sign off on that. I want ambulances and trucks and fire trucks to be able to go both ways at the same time on the same road.
That ain't gonna happen.
Well, that's what I'm saying, is the, those kinds of parking.
But I think we ought to put something about parallel, just, just to clarify.
Sure, good point.
About angled, what are you thinking about going with that, Bob?
I'm thinking, it says each parking space to be credited must be completely abutting and parallel to.
Yeah, identify it as parallel parked.
Oh, you want them to be parallel?
I want them to be parallel, yeah.
Yeah, that's.
There's not a lot of streets that could handle it anyway. I was thinking of, like, maybe.
Third's one.
What about Benson? Like, that's like the widest road, it's insane. You know, that's like.
I don't have a problem putting abutting in there. I don't, angle parking is rare. It takes up more of the right of way. So you would not get it in on both sides. That's why you don't see it on both sides down on the base. I mean, you just don't have the room for it.
Right.
Typically.
I just would hate to see somebody do that.
No, sure.
You're right. No.
Add abutting to.
That's worthy of inclusion.
Got it.
Question.
Yeah.
We're talking about residential streets. Do we need a definition of a residential street versus a commercial street? And what I'm kind of thinking of is, you know, zoning. We have, you know, C1, R1, R4. Should this be directed more toward the zone rather than whatever residential is? I mean, I could have on the 101 above those decrepit stores as they get rebuilt, I could have some apartments that get rented out. And for those people, that would be residential, even though it's in a commercial district.
Well, but it says on B at the introduction of all these points, it says property zoned for residential use. Now, that's a little vague too, because Bill's right. That C1 residential above commercial is a residential use,
but it's
not a residential zone.
Correct.
Right.
No, this would apply. So you're in a C1 in the city center area, and you have a building where you can add, say, two or three apartments above it, your building entirely covers your lot, so you have no place to put off-street parking, but you have available on-street parking adjacent to you, then that would be an option. The city center area, frankly, its public parking is underutilized. When we did the parking study, I mean, it had a lot of capacity in terms of on-street parking.
That's cool. All the buildings are boarded up, so.
Yeah, I know. It's a lot, yeah.
Or when you feel like you're taking your life into your hands if you park and try to have to get out on the traffic side.
Oh, yeah, no, bad
idea. One long chomp.
Yeah, long truck.
A lot of RVs have lost mirrors.
That mean clarification here?
I don't think so. I think residential use is residential use. I mean, we allow residential use in certain circumstances in commercial zones, and it's the predominant, you know, type of use that's allowed in residential zones. So I think it's okay. It's we're just focusing on dwelling units and on street car. I mean, that's really the focus, dwelling units, and whether or not there's whether on street parking that would be available for a credit.
Now, when it says an on-street parking credit, that's one per what?
It'd be an on-street parking credit that reduces the required number of off-street parking spaces by one off-street parking space for every one on-street parking space abutting the property, subject to the following.
Okay.
Yep.
All right. So if it's long enough for three parking spaces, they get three credits.
Then they get three credits. If it's one, it's one. If it's one and a half, it's one. That actually comes up quite a bit in Night Beach when we do this stuff. It's like one and a half. Sorry, you get one.
So you'd have to have 66 feet of frontage to get three.
Yeah.
you're still going to have off-street parking. That's the thing. You try to put in 12 units, you try to put in even 4 units. Like,
yeah, then it's a mix of off-street parking and on-street credit.
You're going to have a combo.
And we run into that in Night Beach from time, you know, where it's a combo.
And they can't count the one across. So there has to be parking on both sides of the street, but they can't count the one on the other side.
Correct.
Yeah, so it's, yeah. This is a non-issue. It's like a little bit of help. Really, it's not going to help that much. It's not like you're going to have, you're not going to have apartment buildings.
Most lots are going to, I mean, their frontage determines how many parking places are going to, I mean, what are lots in this town, 50 feet wide?
Yeah, exactly. So, and you have to have a driveway to get off-street parking.
Exactly. So
if you do a full-on apartment building, say in the city center area, you're going to have to provide some off-street parking.
Yes.
It's going to be a redevelopment because none of the existing buildings are suitable for renovation for that purpose. Tear down, rebuild, and probably put, you could go underground, which is not cheap, but can be done. Do some underground parking or come up with a satellite parking arrangement where they buy a lot that's, you know, proximate to the building and make that available for that purpose.
Paulio, to your point, though, I think that should help maybe alleviate some of the concerns because... I mean, it's not going to be like I put in a 12-unit complex and I have no parking off street. You're still going to have a ton. You're probably going to still have 8. It's cutting down slightly.
Did a good job beating that up a little bit. I got the adding and budding, so that's one change I'm going to be making to it.
Well, adding. Oh.
The budding?
Well, yeah, parallel. You use the word parallel, right?
Every abutting and parallel to.
Yeah. Yeah. What's the implication of this for those lots that are just south of the bead shop or what used to be the bead shop on
Coast Street?
Yeah.
They'd have some credits if they get developed, but there's not a ton of land there, so I'm not sure how much development you're going to see. Actually, I don't know that you're going to see any near term because I know who bought it and I know why he bought it for. Those lots aren't going to get developed, at least near term.
Okay.
And possibly even long term.
What did they buy it for? Park?
GM Kaplan bought it.
Our mayor.
Yes, our mayor, and they're properties next to it, just over on High Street, and he's talked about some sort of additional art park or something. That's kind of what he's talked about. So something
for the community good.
Yeah, he hasn't talked about developing it. Although, frankly, developing it with housing is for the community good too. We need the housing, but. That doesn't appear to be his plan.
He redid the buildings for the bead shop, right?
Pardon?
Where the bead shop was, they redid those.
That's being turned into a boutique hotel.
Oh, okay.
So they're going through and expending the cost to upgrade that to hotel building code. First time we've had somebody try to go down that path. Well, most folks who are interested in short-term rentals won't touch that because it costs too much. But this is a circumstance where, you know, you can make it pencil out if you have a half dozen units, all boutique hotel. We have others in town. Anchor Pier Lodge down on the Bayfront's an example. That's a 4-unit boutique hotel. Met the hotel code.
Which requires
more robust construction.
Spring Street. There seems to be some activity on Spring Street on the west side, near the Jump Off Joe area where the neighborhood trail goes down through.
That property was owned by Bill Lund. Then you know the history on that.
Yes,
you
know,
where
I do.
When he bought it, there was no road down there, but then the county surveyor's office said, hey, stop the presses. We have some historic information that suggests that there's an old right-of-way. Then they went through the process of legally establishing it as a right-of-way, and then Bill Lund ended up going back against the title company because title company never picked it off because it was never on any map. And so he ended up getting reimbursed. Then he tried to make a go of a development there, couldn't make a go of a development there, gave up on the property, and the investors behind it ended up getting foreclosed. I don't know who bought it, but apparently they had a drilling company, an engineering firm come out, and that's what happened down there. Our right-of-way folks have been on that.
Could they be driving with that heavy equipment?
The amount of disturbance is not enough to have triggered a geo. They didn't. I mean, they took out a little bit of shrubbery, and there's a little bit of muck from the drill hole, but it's not enough to trigger anything under our code. But we are asking that they clean it up a little bit, put some bark down and whatnot. The vegetation will grow back.
Yes.
I'm not sure what their next steps are on that. We have not been contacted about any kind of development of what's left of those lots, which isn't much. Once that right-of-way was reestablished, I mean, they're almost down on the beach.
Yeah, I was surprised to see the activity in there. So, you
know, were we.
Yeah,
so
I imagine. We didn't
know either.
So. Yeah, it's been pretty hush-hush. Thank you.
Yep.
Probably ought to move on.
Yeah. Adjustments and variances. To your earlier point, the change to B.
Wait, where are we? Sorry.
Moving into adjustments and variances, 14.3.3.
Okay.
Change to B, no adjustment or variance. See, previously, we would not allow an adjustment to a numerical standard if it would increase density in a residential zone. Eliminating that provision, Dustin, would allow for, I would suspect, with adjustments, a modest amount of land divisions that can't happen right now. There are a number of times where we run into a situation where, say, in Nye Beach, you have a 3,000 square foot minimum lot size, or elsewhere, you have a 5,000 square foot minimum lot size, where somebody has, say, a 5,000 square foot minimum lot size, but they have 9,500 square feet of land. So they can't get two 5,000 square foot lots, but they could get close. Well, that was too bad. You couldn't. There was no process for you to come through. This would open the door for that kind of thing.
Okay.
Obviously, if they're looking for a 50% adjustment, they'll have to throw in a variance. Probably not going to happen. 30% adjustment. Well, hey, it goes to planning commission. You guys get to look at it and determine if it's acceptable. That would be a modest number of infill lots. I can't tell you how many. It would be some here and there. Here's one. A deviation less than or equal to 10% of a numerical standard, we would be able to grant ministerially without any kind of process if the result allows more dwelling units than would otherwise be achievable through strict adherence to the standard. So this would be no notice. This would be just ministerial. Okay, we can do an adjustment up to 10% as part of, say, the building plan review process. Not a type one. Ministerial and type one are different. A type one involves notice to neighbors when the decision is rendered and opportunity to appeal to planning commission, council, up to LUPA. Ministerial, no opportunity notice. No opportunity to appeal.
So up to 10% would be no type one. It's just staff decision.
Correct.
And then
if the result allows more dwelling units than would otherwise be achievable through strict adherence to the numerical standard.
Does that help? So then we can go 44 feet tall. Right? Does it apply to all the standards? So
all standards.
Okay, so it would apply to lot coverage too. And
lot coverage, setbacks would be your most common.
Yeah.
That would be cost effective too, right?
Yeah. Well, it's only, I mean, again, it's a small amount. Like it's
10% is not a huge deviation.
Yeah, it wouldn't change a ton, but it's.
And it would save the permit, you know, somebody getting the permit time because you wouldn't have to go through planning and that. Saves money. I mean, isn't that kind of where the governor's like Or this whole idea is...
Yeah, there's a bunch, you probably saw, there's a whole bunch of 10%, so even some 25%, so I didn't even try to go there, like 25% deviation of landscaping and stuff like that, but...
And the reason you don't want to change it in the actual table is so that you have discretion to look at a plan and look at an actual lot and look at a specific project and
will say, it result in more dwelling units?
Yeah, that makes sense.
Not just, is I don't want to bother with it.
Yeah, I get it.
Will it give us more dwelling? If it doesn't give us more dwelling units, no.
Yeah, okay.
Go through the standard process, which is still there,
yeah.
which is B. And then I'll have to change the numbering, and then the 10 to 40, that's all still the same.
B's language is wrong, though, now, right? Other
deviations. No, other deviations. So if it's...
that don't...
Yeah, result in additional dwelling units. So say something, which we run into all the time.
Yeah.
I don't want to do a 15-foot front yard setback. I want to do 13 because it works better with the orientation of my house. Could you still do the 15? Yeah, but I don't want to do it. I want to do something slightly less because it works better with the orientation of the new house or whatever. There's always a reason for it. But it doesn't result in additional dwelling units, so...
So that's the kind of thing you've been doing all along, right?
I've not had this ability, no. I have not had the ability to do a deviation less than 10% ministerially. Now, there are a number of jurisdictions
to do it. I thought you could always grant an automatic 10% on height.
Nope. It was a type one. We just did that on Windhaven. And to your question about would this give Windhaven more than the 40? No, because they're not going to be able to show that it results in more dwelling units.
I mean, yeah. Was the 5 and 12 thing tied to this? You had our 4 and 12? Do we did 3 and 12, 4 and 12? I can't remember now.
No, 4 and 12. You were pushing for 3 and 12. And
but could
Gary's,
you...
Gary said, be reasonable, 4 and 12.
Yeah. Would that... Was that a requirement that's it has to be that pitch in order to have the 40, right?
That's how we had it structured.
Okay.
Is there any?
Why do you want
to? You could. This could be an alternative way of dealing with the height issue to a point as well.
Yeah.
And not do the 40 feet. That's an option as well. That because a deviation of, for example, that 10%. Would have gotten Windhaven where they needed to be at 38.5 feet. That would have gotten them there.
We have clients right now that want to do an apartment complex and they're running into this exact same issue. So it's interesting. I told them, I was like, you're having a flat roof. And they're like, we don't want a flat roof. I'm like, you're having a flat roof. If you want three stories, like it's going to be a very, very shallow roof.
Yeah, it's hard for them to get three stories with a pitched roof. It's just really hard to do it.
Be ugly too.
Yeah.
Well, sometimes you end up having to play with grade and finish grade to make it happen,
yeah.
Backfill up against your foundation. It's just really hard to get there. And visually, we're not talking about earth-shattering differences here.
With respect to proving that there's a change in dwelling unit count,
yeah.
Is there potential for disagreement between the applicant and you? Do we have to clarify that allows more dwelling units, in your opinion?
That's fair. We could do it that way, to avoid
just to avoid having
that's a good point
back and forth on some theoretical plan that really wouldn't happen.
They can still appeal what the
that's
director
a good goal.
Says.
Yeah.
Right?
You don't meet that
they
goal.
They can't appeal it.
No.
Right.
As a ministerial then?
No, we would just force them through. No. Ministerial.
Okay.
They can't. That's flexibility we have to do things ministerially.
Okay.
If we don't believe that it meets the bar that was set for ministerial, we'll direct them through another process.
You go to type two, though. You wouldn't go to type one because type one still.
Probably go to type two.
Yeah, you go straight to a type
go
two.
Go to planning commission.
Yeah.
So type two means you'd have to pull a permit, right? Versus. I don't know what type
you guys just would have to approve it.
Okay.
Yeah. It's,
and type one, you could pull a permit?
Type one goes to mailing, but there's no planning commission.
Okay.
Derek, type ones, you still are the final approval.
I make a decision, but it's appealable.
Yeah.
Okay. I just curious what type one, type two.
Yeah, that might be another way I could handle it, is just deny it through a type one and it gets appealed to you guys.
Let me ask Derek, sure. It's 7 o'clock. We do have a public hearing, quote, on the agenda, although I bet we're not going to have any public testimony.
Well, we could take this up next meeting.
Well, I'm wondering how you want to handle
it. Yeah, how about we work through this, because we only have one more item on this one, I think. 1452 was the last, and I'm getting pretty close to it. Work through this piece, do the public hearing, and then defer the discussion on RV parks to the next meeting.
I'm going to request that anyway.
Is that fair?
Yeah.
Because this is, we're almost there here.
I think it's only 3 more pages, right? Or 2 more pages?
Yeah, we're almost there.
We're 12 or 14?
13 and 14 here.
Yeah, okay.
But, so the procedural change, there's only one more change we need to talk about here. We never put, when we put in the definition for ministerial, we never put in, you know, under the approval authority, who gets to do ministerial stuff. The ministerial stuff would be handled by staff. So this is simply an addition that says ministerial actions necessary to implement Title 14 and Municipal Code, which is our zoning code, including final plats, which is how we handle them already. You do the approval of the tentative, but then when they come in and bring in the final survey document, all I do is confirm, does it align with what your decision was? As long as it does, then I sign it off and take it over to the county surveyor. The only difference between a final plat and what you guys see when you do the approval is it's got more of the technical stuff on it. Some of the bearing stuff, some distance and bearings been cleaned up. There's some additional surveying notes on it, that kind of thing. Property line, again, property line adjustment conveyance documents, that's something we do in a ministerial way. I just listed a few of the examples. Public improvement agreements, temporary uses, unless the temporary use process has an alternative. There's one of them that has an alternative process. And then confirmation that building permits satisfy clear and objective approval standards. So when we do our building, as Dustin knows, when we do a building plan review, the land use review happens at the same time. That's when we confirm that setbacks have been met, building height limitations have been met, garage setbacks are in place, all that kind of stuff. Lot coverage has been met. But those are clear and objective standards. You either meet them or you don't. Do you meet a 15-foot setback or not? Do you meet a 60% lot coverage max or not? I mean, so it's all clear and objective stuff. And so this is just adds in there that the community development director or designee does the ministerial stuff.
Seems like you're taking more issues that could come before your office and defining them as ministerial. And so I'm looking at it, and it's efficient, we call it ministerial, but on the other hand, are we limiting public input or an opportunity for the public to object or have comment? I'm kind of torn there in clarifying so many activities as ministerial.
Well, as you know, because this will have to come back for action, think about it and weigh it, but I mean, that's what this is about. This is about taking some things that have traditionally been in the appealable notice appeals and moving them into the ministerial where the developer has assurance, okay, I can do this. I don't have to come and ask permission and risk having this appealed to LUBA. I can do this. Now, you're not seeing in here 30, 40, 50% adjustments, 10%. So relatively minor adjustments to standards.
So on, let's go historically over the last 3 years. How many of these potential ministerial actions were actually appealed?
Well, I'll use Windhaven. Windhaven phase one was appealed. We granted it there and you denied it when the neighbors came in and said they didn't want it. That was Windhaven Phase 1, which had the apartments up on the hill.
Very top, yeah.
And they ended up having to redesign, do quite a bit more earthwork to drop the structures to make it happen.
Yep.
Because they couldn't afford to redo all of the buildings, so they ended up doing the earthwork piece on that. So it happens.
But they didn't appeal.
That, you know, that you had, you know, public opportunity to help... help form your policy.
You're actually encouraging people to ask for less, in theory. I think you're encouraging people to ask for less, right? Because it's like, oh, there's, you know, you're not asking for some excessive, like 20, 25% thing. You can say, oh, okay, there's a lot of risk and money involved every single time a project comes to you guys. There's a ton of hours, a ton of deliverables that have to be submitted to the city to go through a type two process.
Are those hours billable just?
Not always billable. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, what if, you know, I can't just sit here and tell you, okay, over the course of the last 10 years, there's been X number of projects that have not happened because of the risk associated with the land use process. It has, I can tell you, I know it has, but I can't give you a number.
No, but most definitely. That happens all the time.
I mean, yeah. And that's why the governor's pitching this stuff is because, you know, there are projects that could lead to viable, affordable housing that do not move forward because of the uncertainty of these processes.
But if we take your Windhaven as an example, you had public input, and those neighbors were now happy. They had an opportunity to help modify the design.
I would argue that those neighbors, most of which who objected to it, aren't happy at all because they didn't want to see apartments there. And that's really what the issue was, and not the height at all. Because we had Windhaven Phase 3 also get a 10% adjustment. Guess what? That one wasn't appealed. So that one's at 38.5 feet. It's a stone's throw from Windhaven Phase 1.
That would be
so important. You're in favor of the policies that the governor has?
No, but I recognize that... No, I'm not. In particular, some of them, yes, but not the package as it's structured, and I certainly am not in support of
parking. Wouldn't it be helpful if we waited to see what the short session does, see what the state mandates?
Now, is the goal to meet the housing production strategy?
That's the point. We're doing this because we're trying to continue to move the dial on housing in Newport. And so I think it's prudent and appropriate for us to move forward with what we think makes sense. And the housing production strategy, we identified a range of issues that are appropriate for us to poke at, and that's what this responds to. These are issues that will help with getting more housing.
Regardless
of whatever happens there. I do believe it'll end up getting passed.
I could use a little clarification. I asked you a while ago, said, you've always been able to grant 10%, and you said, no, we never have been able to. Then you said Windhaven Phase 3, they got a 10%, and I know we didn't approve that.
Right, so, because it was a staff level land use decision, which means I had to send notice out to surrounding property owners that we did that, and they had an opportunity to appeal to you, and that did not happen.
Okay, so it's, whereas you do have the ability to say yes, but only after notifying the public.
Right, and if they appeal it, it goes to you. And that's what happened with Windhaven Phase 1.
Okay, that was my question.
And I'm fairly, as I recall from that process, which is pretty typical, that was appealed not so much because of the issues with the height. Yeah. It was appealed because they didn't want to see apartments there.
So if it's ministerial, there's no appeal.
Right.
There's no notice to the neighbors.
Right.
It's done in secret.
Any building permit is...
We issue all kinds of development permits that have no notice, Braulio. I mean, there's tons of them. I mean...
All of them. I mean, you don't have to notice anyone.
Well, no, only if for certain land use action. If they comply with the standards, they get to build, and there's no notice.
It's public record, so if anyone sees something going on, you can go down to the city hall and say, "Hey, I want to see the plans."
And again, you know, we're not talking about huge. We're talking about 10%, which is not a major adjustment. In fact, you don't see. I mean, you like I said. Like Windhaven Phase 2, that wasn't appealed, you don't see it because it's a small, minor adjustment. You have seen a number of adjustment proposals, but those tend to be in the 30 to 40% range that come to you, and that's not changed. That's still there.
The parking for the hotel was, or there's things, for the hotel is like 15%, and you still brought it to the, as one of the items for adjustment.
And it would still come before you guys, along with the... well, in that case, it was a conditional use too. So none of that's changing. That's all there.
But that didn't have this hotel, the one that's not housing, right? So, I mean, that only
applies to density. Right, that was bad.
But, I mean, that's, I'm sorry, yeah, that's a hotel. But, I mean, yeah.
There was the adjustment part, or the percentage, is what.
What you were thinking of.
That's an absolute 10% in your mind?
That's a logical breakpoint.
I mean, but that's what that number truly means.
Right. Not 11.
Because, I mean, Minister, I can probably deal with 10%. And the decision relies on just your judgment.
Mm-hmm.
It's when it gets bigger than 10% that it's not that I don't trust you, it's that I don't trust you, you know, kind of thing.
Well, well, if it's over 10%, it goes to you guys.
Well, I agree. I understand. Okay. But at 10%, it's hard to imagine that the public is going to be any more outraged because they haven't followed the project or been that curious mm-hmm. about it to begin with. But mm-hmm. I do believe Derek is somewhat correct in what those neighbors were concerned about with the phase one.
And then the housing production study went through a lot of public hearings and a lot of input.
I was on the committee. Nobody showed up at the hearings other than the participants.
Well, people showed up here.
You're also hanging a carrot. If you want more affordable housing, it's a carrot that Derek can give to housing developers and say, hey, like, if you can prove that you can provide more housing, like, we have a little bit of flexibility here. I mean, that's something that would incentivize a developer to say, oh, okay, well, shoot, let's figure out how we can get more housing on this lot. And if the overall goal is to get more housing in Newport, you want to support that.
Were saying when they came to the housing producing meeting was they wanted clear rules they could follow rather than something that might be ambiguous or, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
They wanted to have clear, defined rules so they knew what they could do, what they couldn't do, so they could move forward.
If I do a project like this, I think about it and I go, I have to prove to Derek that I can get another unit on this and then show him that. And I would have that be the goal within a 10%
mm-hmm.
All the way around. You know, here's what I could get. Without the 10%, here's what I could get.
Yeah,
with
I would
10%.
Say that would be clear. Not a developer, but
whatever that ends up looking like, but that would be the goal. Is
well, you know, and as someone here said, the concept is, does it get us another door?
Yeah, it would.
That's what's built into the language here. That's mm-hmm. why, you know, having that added to that section would be valuable. I mean, if 10% doesn't get us another room or another unit. Sorry.
Yeah, too bad, yeah.
Yeah, sorry.
What if they come to you with multiple 10% requests? I want 10% less setback all four sides.
Yeah, no,
Can you then say to them, I'm not comfortable doing that, we're going to do it as a type one? Is that your choice then?
That's a good question. I didn't put a list. I didn't try to list it. I think the governor's thing says no more than 10. I'd be comfortable looking at it as those would be each individual 10% request. Again, does it get us additional units?
Well, the combination of the four
does
might.
The combination get us there?
Yeah, does it meet?
Because they're each individual distinct adjustments.
And meet the
I don't have a problem with it. I think we could work with that. I like that better than
but
trying to put an arbitrary
have,
number to it.
Under this scheme, would you have the ability to say to the developer, I'm sorry, I'm not comfortable with that level of analysis. I'd like the Planning Commission to be involved.
Or how about the public, you know?
Well, that by implication, that
yeah.
is the public.
Notifying the neighbors.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't... Not as drafted. It doesn't have that kind of where it says at my discretion I can kick this into a land use process, and to some degree that defeats the purpose, is because that just introduces an uncertainty.
Right. You deny it, right. You'll be doing that though. It's still at your discretion, so you can just choose to deny it, and then it has to go to a type two if they want to keep going, right?
Well, I think that gets at less the number of adjustments, and I don't think it's going to get to an additional dwelling unit.
That's what I mean. That's all. That's the rubric, right? You say, I'm looking at this, and given the information I see right now, I don't see how you're getting another unit.
I don't see how we're getting another unit, so we're not going down that path.
Canceled. Yeah,
right.
You're automatically.
Then they come here.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah. You have to talk to PC.
Yeah. Yeah, if they disagree with that.
In the public about that.
And yeah, I can tweak the language to make it clear that it can be redirected in that manner.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
I'd appreciate that.
Yeah, I think adding that.
I think that helps the developer too.
Yeah, that's true, because then from a developer, they're like, wait, your code says I get this 10% if I'm getting another unit.
Yeah,
yeah,
let's. Ground rules are important.
Wasn't the housing production strategy adopted?
By council, yeah. But, well, upon recommendation of Planning Commission and by council.
Right, and then it got approved through the state.
But it's...
Yes.
So, yeah. if never mind.
And I'd sort of look at this two ways. It's both an encouragement for the affordable housing and an encouragement to be modest in your request for departures from our code, but also an encouragement to avoid the 30 or 40 or 50% variances. Don't take that risk.
Yeah.
We're handing you a sure thing.
Yeah.
Go for it.
Yeah.
And so, yes, that means there's less public input, but there's less public input because there's less public impact. So I'm supportive of the approach. I sort of see what's happening in the Bay Area, where we've got builder remedy issues coming forward. We've got high rises coming up, because the same thing's happening in California.
Yeah,
state mandated rules that override localities and take public comment away. And boy, we don't want to be in that situation where we're behind the eight ball. I love the fact you're trying to get ahead of what you see coming from the state. So I am sure it will continue to come.
Yeah, unfortunately. The league has really put in a big effort, and communities, large and small, through the League of Oregon Cities have put in a big effort to try to influence the governor. But you got a lot of folks whispering in the governor's ear, and you've got the Home Builders Association, you've got realtors, you've got, you know, private property owners, you've got a lot of different, you've got, you know, nonprofits who struggle getting affordable housing on the ground. You got a lot of people, you know, saying this is what you need to do, this is what you need to do, and this is the direction it's going, and they're locking in on this approach. I don't like state-driven mandates that it's all local government shall do this in a uniform way. Parking is a great example. We don't have the transit capacity Portland has. Why are we being treated the same way? You know, it's not like, I mean, folks in our community don't have the option of hopping on a bus or light rail. They have to drive. You know, so why are you treating us exactly, and that's what you get with this, it must be this way. So I'll be clear, I don't like all aspects of that proposal. I understand why the governor's doing it. Also, I'm a realist, you know, in terms of where it's at, given how things played out at the end of last session. And you're right, I do think we need to get ahead of it. Because if we have a package that works for developers in our community, then we don't have to deal with that.
You know, you do a lot of good work. I'm just concerned with taking the housing proposal that was adopted by our council and procedural amendments to limit public input, public opportunity to object, and public notice. I have a concern with that. The rest of your proposal looks pretty good, although we still have to examine the off-street parking issue.
And you did bring that up during the housing production strategy, and I think a lot of the commissioners did the same. So.
I know the parking piece is a big left side. Okay, I think we beat this up pretty good. I've got a number of changes.
Okay, we're gonna defer the whole T. Discussion.
Yeah, let's do that. We ran out of time, so
we got Holte and we got RV.
RVs.
Okay.
We'll pick up at the next meeting.
All right, then moving right along, city manager recruitment. Anybody have any questions or comments about that?
Did we all get an email from Spencer about
several?
Yeah, about the retirement.
Yeah. Any unfinished business, Derek?
work program update. I think we can all just look at that.
Yeah, I think we're good. Nothing, no unfinished business.
Okay, work session is over. Moving right along.
Have a nice evening.
Call to order the regular